Well, hello, my friends. Good evening. How are you doing? Happy Thursday, a day before Friday, the weekend getting started, maybe an Aloha Friday. Hope things are going fantastic. Let me know where you are listening in from tonight. Say hello. Mike joining us from Florida says, "What's up?" Hey, Mike. How's it going? I'm feeling much better today than I was on Thursday. I mean, on Tuesday. See, I still can't think. So that's a good thing. I was telling you about my brain fog and these issues that I've been facing lately. And, so far so good the last day or two. So that's nice. Orion already responding to my first question about the wealth tax tonight. We'll dive into that. But first, as always, let me know where you are listening in from and say hello. And I think I've got all the kinks worked out here for my audio and my kind of new setup. Things are improving very quickly. Be sure and like and follow and share. If you do that, you'll get a reward on the screen. And it's a different reward for every broadcast. So please be sure and do that. Mike says, currently humidity in Southern Florida. 4,340,800. Yeah, I got that wrong. Was that 4 billion percent? And the temperature is about the same as Satan's armpit. Definitely one of the things that I do not miss about Florida. Nope, the humidity. It's like you get in the shower and you towel off when you get off, and it doesn't matter. You can keep toweling off. It doesn't matter. The water's not going away. Melissa joining us on Facebook. I don't know if we've seen you comment here before, Melissa. She says, "I'm from Lehigh. Been listening to you since you co-hosted with Amy Iverson. Thanks for making the world a brighter place." Thank you, Melissa. That is very kind and high praise. Thank you. Melissa, I've got a little bit of a surprise for you tonight. I've been working on this for a while, and it was actually prompted by Orion, who joins us on a regular basis. He doesn't know that I've been working on this, but I have been. You know, we've been talking about changing the narrative. We've been talking about treating each other differently. We've been talking about building on common ground. We've been talking about that evil word, civility, right? Well, I've been thinking about this, and again, it was a prompt from Orion, that I think we've forgotten how to have conversations with each other. We've certainly forgotten how to debate with each other. And we have fallen back on all of the logical fallacies. It's like these are now the mainstay of our arguments and our discussions. And we see a lot of this here often when somebody new to the broadcast will pop in and they'll start attacking me. Or they'll start, you know, implementing a lot of these fallacies. And I really feel like the core group of you that join me on a regular basis, I hope we don't fall into this trap very often, but I think that we do, and I know I do at times. So what I want to do is make a little bit of a game of it, and I want your help. I want to weed out all of the logical fallacies from my discussion. And I want to weed them out of society. But in order to do that, we have to know what the logical fallacies are. So I have spent some time and put together some little graphics that are going to appear on the screen when somebody uses a logical fallacy. Now, I want you to call me out if you think I've used a logical fallacy. So somebody was doing it the other night. I think it was Mike saying that I was using a straw man argument. I disagreed with him, but he pointed it out. And so what I want to do is help you when you use a logical fallacy, and I want you to help me when I use a logical fallacy, and anytime any of the commenters do this, I want to point it out as well, and we'll make it kind of like a game show so that we can help each other weed this out. And there's one other thing that I would like to help me weed out here. And that is, I've been making these training videos. They're over on my other site, my YouTube site, JMac Hacks. And I've been listening back to the way that I speak. And I realized that, you know, I laugh when Utahns say, like, I haven't bought any yet. Well, I caught myself saying something over and over again, and I'm tempted to go back and re-record them because I say it so often. Instead of saying I'm going to, I say I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. I don't know if you've heard me say it. I probably don't say it too often here because I don't use that phrase very often. But in these training videos, I say, okay, now I'm going to go up here to the top left. And instead of saying going to, I say, I'm going to. So if you catch me saying any of those things, please help me out. I'd like to weed those out of my language. Carrot Eater on Twitch joining us. Haven't seen you here before. Thank you for joining us. And Mike says, ding, ding, ding. Sounds like a game plan. David joining us. David and Mary Jane joining us. Thank you, David and Mary Jane, for the very kind email you sent me the other day. It meant a lot to me. So, okay. So I'm going to take you through these. We'll do it quickly. And maybe we'll refer back to this on a regular basis. But let's learn about what the logical fallacies are. And let's try and weed them out of our arguments, okay? Mike says, Imana is pretty Utah, really, like Crick and Layton. Melissa says, weed them out. I love your Utah slang. Heather says, hi from Riverton. Okay, logical fallacy number one. This is the most common one, the ad hominem fallacy. The see, I'm going to have to pronounce these, and that's problematic. An ad hominem fallacy uses personal attacks rather than logic. When do we see that? This fallacy occurs when someone rejects or criticizes another point of view based on the personal characteristics, ethnic background, physical appearance, or other non-related traits of the person who holds it. This is the ad hominem fallacy. So when you hear or see somebody use this on the show, we're going to bring up this graphic and we're going to remind people that this is of no value and that it's something that society should look past and see as weakness, not as strength. Mike giving us an example of an ad hominem. Jenny joining us from Logan. Okay, I got some of the other ones here. This one is appeal to authority or authority. Appeal to authority is the misuse of an authority's opinion to support an argument. While an authority's opinion can represent evidence and data, it becomes a fallacy if their expertise or authority is overstated, illegitimate, or irrelevant to the topic. So that's the appeal to authority. Again, we'll move through these quickly. Appeal to hypocrisy. This one is so common today. So common. Appeal to hypocrisy, also known as the tu quoque fallacy. I looked it up on how to pronounce it. You can also say tu quoque, but the more correct Latin is tu quoque. Fallacy focuses on the hypocrisy of an opponent. This fallacy deflects criticism away from oneself by accusing the other person of the same problem or something comparable. Oh, yeah? Well, the Democrats lie. Oh, yeah? Well, the Republicans dot, dot, dot. We think that this somehow makes the behavior correct, when the reality is you're admitting that what's happening is wrong. But you're trying to excuse it away with the behavior of other people. This is the equivalent of my children telling me, well, he started it. Nolan joining us. Orion says, also known as whataboutism. Yep, we hear a lot about that. Okay, going through the other logical fallacies, here's another one that we hear all the time. The appeal to ignorance. An appeal to ignorance, also known as an argument of ignorance, argues that a proposition must be true because it has not been proven false, or there is no evidence against it. We hear this one very often as we talk about COVID myths or election fraud myths. We hear the appeal to ignorance a lot. All right, the next one, the appeal to pity. And yes, I spelled pity with two Y's because pity should have two Y's. Why doesn't it? Answer me that. An appeal to pity relies on provoking your emotions to win an argument rather than factual evidence. Appealing to pity attempts to pull on an audience's heartstrings, distract them, and support their point of view. Mike says, appeal to hypocrisy. The Republicans did XYZ, so it must be okay. Mike says, appeal to ignorance. We'll prove the stands wrong. Okay, where are we at? Appeal to pity with two T's. Bandwagon, the bandwagon fallacy assumes something is true or right or good because others agree with it. In other words, the fallacy argues that if everyone thinks a certain way, then you should too. So, for example, we need an election audit because the majority of Utahns believe there should be an election audit. Does that mean there should be an audit? I don't know. Is that bandwagon? You tell me. The next one, causal, and I keep calling this one casual, the casual fallacy. It's not, it's the causal fallacy. The causal fallacy. This one is also correlation, causation. You hear that as well. Causal fallacies are informal fallacies that occur when an argument incorrectly concludes that a cause is related to an effect. Think of the causal fallacy as a parent category for other fallacies, about unproven causes. So that's the causal, or I like to say casual fallacy. Circular argument. We've seen this one a lot recently. Circular arguments occur when a person's argument repeats what they already assumed before without arriving at a new conclusion. For example, if someone says, according to my brain is reliable. That's a circular argument. Let's see what else. The equivocation. This is another one. Ooh, I like the flames. I wish you could see the flames if you're on the podcast. Equivocation happens when a word, phrase, or sentence is used deliberately to confuse, deceive, or mislead. In other words, saying one thing but meaning another. We see this one a lot in politics. The false dilemma. This one, very, very common today. This is a false dichotomy, presents limited options, typically by focusing on two extremes, when in fact more possibilities exist. The phrase America, love it or leave it, is an example of a false dilemma. For me, perfect, most prevalent example of false dilemma today is that Democrats are all wrong, Republicans are all right. Is that a false dilemma? Do you think I got that right? I don't know if I understand all these correctly. Again, that's why I want us to start using this terminology and start weeding these things out of out of our language. Heather says, is the connection cutting out for others too, or is it just me? Chris says, no connection issue on my end, Heather. Thank you guys for helping me monitor the feed here. I'm also broadcasting out on Podbean Live, which is the app where you can listen to my podcast after the fact. I don't think that's impacting our system because I'm actually piping it into another computer and sending it out that way. Okay, where we're at, false dilemma. Okay, another one, hasty generalizations. A hasty generalization is a claim based on a few examples rather than substantial proof. Arguments based on hasty generalizations often don't hold up due to lack of supporting evidence. The claim might be true in one case, but that doesn't mean it's always true. We see hasty generalizations all the time. I talk about it as anecdotal evidence. Some would accuse me of making hasty generalizations, like the other night when I said I talked to some people who were providing a service in my home and three people in their office died of COVID. Now, you will notice when I say those things, I preface my statement by saying this is anecdotal. So I kind of know I'm about to do it. And I say this doesn't mean it's that way for everybody because I'm trying to catch myself. Nolan says your video seems a little off from the video to me. The audio from the video, not much I can do about that unless maybe it's my new recording setup. Actually, I can see it now that you mention it. I can see it just a little bit off. So that might be something that I need to adjust on this end. But I'm not going to do it. Today. Orion says, did you catch a disease on Tuesday? No. If you missed the show, I think I'm experiencing long COVID. I've had some serious brain fog issues for about 5 months now, and it's not going away. The problem is I don't know if I ever had COVID. I got really sick back in February of 2020 before we knew about COVID. My wife and I both, we went to Las Vegas, came back home, and were sicker than we've ever been. All the symptoms of COVID, but we didn't know about COVID at the time. So I don't know if it's long COVID. I don't know. Mike says, forgive me, a lot of these definitions are new to me, so I'm writing them out to help see them later. If you want, I will put a link to, I'm sure there are varying definitions. There's probably not one authority on logical fallacies. I'll try and put a link in the description after this post to show you what these are. Okay, so where we're at, hasty generalizations. Let's go to red herring. I love my red herring graphic. A red herring is an argument that uses confusion or distraction to shift attention from a topic and toward a false conclusion. Red herrings usually contain an unimportant fact, idea, or event that has little relevance to the real issue. That's red herring. Another popular one, slippery slope. I love this graphic or this GIF or GIF. It makes me laugh every time. A slippery slope argument assumes that a certain course of action will necessarily lead to a chain of future events. The slippery slope fallacy takes a benign premise or starting point and suggests that it will lead to unlikely or ridiculous outcomes with no supporting evidence. This is not to suggest that one thing doesn't lead to another, but because one thing can lead to another. And I think it's important to not just outright dismiss something as a slippery slope, but to have a discussion as to whether or not that is viable. Mike says, you ever get an antigen antibody test? No, I didn't. I didn't. Mike also says the video looks fine from here. So it could just be varying connections. Orion says, now that Jay has been vaccinated, he'll test positive for COVID antibodies, but to tell you if those are from the vaccine or the actual disease, probably a test you can't get easily. All right, two left here. The straw man argument. This is the one I was accused of the other night. A straw man argument attacks a different subject rather than the topic being discussed, often a more extreme version of the counter argument. The purpose of this misdirection is to make one's position look stronger than it actually is. And one more here. I don't hear this one as often. This is the sunk cost argument. A sunk cost fallacy is when someone continues doing something because of the effort they already put into it, regardless of whether the additional costs outweigh the potential benefits. Sunk cost is an economic term for any past expenses that can no longer be recovered. Don't hear this one as often, but it does come up. So there you go, 15 logical fallacies. I think Many of them are used so prevalently today. So what I want to do is I want to train us, all of us here participating in this together. I want you to point it out when you think I'm using one of these fallacies, because I hate them. And I seek and I strive to not use them. So I want you to point it out. I'm going to point it out when I hear them from you, and I want you to point them out when you hear them from other commenters. Together, I think that we can improve ourselves and improve our interaction. And then maybe we can expand that outward and remind people that these arguments, these fallacies, prove nothing. They may make you feel better about yourself, but they prove nothing. They accomplish nothing beyond that. And we need to get back to a place where if we believe something and we are arguing for it, that we don't have to rely on these logical fallacies to achieve them. So that is my point. Orion says a slippery slope. I love that one. Republicans use that one a lot. Mike says Orion, both party use slippery slope. Yes, they do. Nolan says, do both sides commit logical fallacies? Absolutely. I will tell you that I'm hearing a lot more on the right now because of election fraud allegations and because of COVID conspiracies. So I'm hearing a lot more from a single direction right now than I would say it was much more balanced in the past. But because the right has embraced so these two things so firmly that we're hearing more of them from the right. It, you know, and I say this all the time, if you would have told me 5 years ago that I would be spending so much of my broadcast time focusing on things that the right is doing, I would have been shocked, because I've spent 20 years in radio as a conservative, trying to be fair to both sides, but taking aim at the left for their policies. And now I spend so much time, and I've actually left the Republican Party now, and because of these two issues. If these two issues were not there, I would still be a member of the party. So unfortunately, yeah, Nolan, I think a lot of it really is shining from the right now. Okay, so those are the logical fallacies. When you hear them, when you see them, let's call them out. Let's train each other. Now let's get back to the subject matter of the night. You've seen the stories. Dave, who was listening tonight, he sent me a text earlier today talking about the wealth tax. Now, this is different than tax the rich. This is the wealth tax. Now, what in the world is the wealth tax? Mike says, are you willing to divulge or are you no party affiliation? Right now, looking for a home. Haven't found that home, looking for a home. Okay, now I'm not going to, from this point on, let you distract me from the subject matter. That way we can, those people who are listening to the podcast can hear the commentary, and then we'll get to other texts and questions. If you want, we can spend as much time after we get through some of these topics afterwards. So if you can keep your topics on the subject matter of discussion now, I promise you, once we get through them, we can talk about anything that you want to talk about. All right. So the wealth tax, it's simple. Right now, and I don't know how many of you know this, but one of my day jobs, one of my many, is I am a tax advisor for an accounting firm that deals with day traders. So I take calls every day and I help people set themselves up, if they are a day trader, for the best tax situations. So I'm very familiar with what we're about to talk about as far as the tax code is concerned. So here's the idea. Right now, and you know this if you own stock or if you own crypto, or even if you own property, if you buy something like a stock and then you hold it and it grows in value, it appreciates, you're not taxed on that appreciation. You're not taxed on that gain until you sell. So if you bought a stock at $10 a share and it's now at $100 a share, but you haven't sold it, then you're not taxed on that. And when somebody like Jeff Bezos, when you hear that he's worth like, I don't know, $180 billion or something like that, it's not cash money. It's stock. It's stock in Amazon. So when he first acquired that stock, because he's the founder of the company, it was worth very little, right? And then as the company has grown, the value of that stock has gone up. So that $180 billion is not his income. It's not money that he is using or attaching to. It's an untaxable gain at this point until he sells. Well, the idea is that they want to tax that gain to pay for more government stuff. And a lot of people are going, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And so what I want to talk to you about today, and Dave mentioned this when he sent me the text, unintended consequences. Let's talk about unintended consequences. And today, instead of believing me, I'm going to actually refer to a great write-up from the Deseret News, who published an opinion piece, an editorial. This is by Jay Evanson. And the main reason that I want to read this to you is not to say all of this is true, because there is opinion in here. It's just to help you understand unintended consequences, because that's what, in my opinion, so often gets left on the cutting room floor when it comes to policies that Democrats want to put in place. Unintended consequences. We've talked about the unintended consequences of the Affordable Care Act and how those were obvious and they came true. Unintended consequences of government programs that sound great. And, you know, on the one hand, I'm like, hey, at least Democrats are trying to pay for what they're spending right now, a concept that has become foreign to both parties. But this is not the way to do it, in my opinion. So let me read this to you, and then we'll get your comments. The Democratic plan in Congress. Okay, let's go back here. Senator Joe Manchin, Senator, speaks with reporters on Capitol Hill in Washington. I guess I should show this to you, shouldn't I? So that you can read along. Can you see that okay? Manchin's objections to the expensive Build Back Better Act has forced Democrats to consider alternative funding mechanisms such as wealth tax on billionaires. The Democratic plan in Congress would discourage investments and harm U.S. competitiveness abroad. Again, this is according to the editorial. Ronald Reagan put government tax policy into precise alignment when he said, if you want more of something, subsidize it. If you want less of something, tax it. Democrats in Congress should take those words to heart as they deliberate how to pay for a pared-down Build Back Better Act. Do they really want the ultra-rich to invest less? That may well be the unintended consequences of a wealth tax, now taking center stage as a way to fund the massive expansion of a federal government that hasn't yet figured out how to pay for what it already spends. The plan is to tax billionaires on the increased value of the stocks and bonds in their portfolios, even though they haven't yet cashed in on those investments. Often the ultra-rich will borrow off those untaxed investments to live comfortably and tax-free. Presumably, if Uncle Sam taxes interest that exists only on paper. The government also would have to provide refunds during those years when investments lose money, which might also create some perverse incentives. The idea of taxing the investments of wealthy people has a certain feel-good, stick-it-to-the-man quality to it. But feeling good doesn't always equate to solving a problem. It might even create more of them. Like it or not, investments fuel business growth and provide the necessary capital for entrepreneurs to begin startups. The Los Angeles Times editorial board, which noted that Larry Ellison, the billionaire chief executive of Oracle, financed a line of credit from $10 billion in company stock. And the Elon Musk of Tesla fame secured personal loans with more than $55 billion of his company's stock, thought of a better solution. So why not tax gains on shared use on, sorry, here's, now they're not just presenting the cons here. So why not tax gains on shares used to collateralize a loan or support some other transactions? A recent Times editorial asked. That would hew to the logic of the current system and wouldn't discourage taxpayers from making investments for the long term. It would simply prevent them from generating consumable income in a way that avoids taxes. So do you understand what they're saying? Don't tax the gains that are unrealized. If somebody wants to gain access to the value of those gains through loans or something else, then it's as if they're using those gains at that moment. So that's when you put the tax in. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? He says, why not indeed? Do Democrats really want to follow a path many Western European countries have tried and abandoned? Economist Milton Friedman once jokingly told me Americans shouldn't try socialism because they aren't as good at it as Western Europeans. But that shouldn't be an excuse for not learning from their mistakes. The Tax Foundation, a tax policy think tank, said 12 members of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, had such a tax in the 90s. By 2019, only 5 did. An OECD report, the foundation said, argues that these taxes can disincentivize risk-taking and entrepreneurship, harming innovation and impacting long-term growth. Do Democrats really want to hurt American competitiveness in the world? Since 2014, the Tax Foundation has published an annual International Tax Competitiveness Index that compares the tax system of OECD countries in terms of how they promote development and are easy for taxpayers to use, among other things. Following the Trump tax cuts in 2017, the U.S. rose from 31st out of 37 countries on the list to 24th. It now ranks 21st. But the foundation said this week the current Democratic plan would lower the U.S. to 32nd. The reason? The proposed changes to the tax code would make the U.S. a less attractive place for businesses and workers. This isn't because it would tax people more. Sweden, which imposes an extremely high tax burden on its people, ranks 7th on the list. However, its tax structure is less distortive to economic activity and workers' decisions. Two important things in a world where businesses and workers aren't afraid to move across borders. Making the rich pay more in taxes is not necessarily a bad thing if it's done in a way that won't distort the economy. But it's not smart to rely on it for much revenue, considering the ultra-rich make up a small subset of the population, one that constantly changes along with economic conditions. The United States has a long and unique history of its wealthiest citizens turning into philanthropists. This started with Andrew Carnegie, who eventually gifted cities from coast to coast with 2,800 public libraries. And it continues today through efforts such as the Gates Foundation and Utah's own Larry H. Miller Charities. Taxing them more won't necessarily end this largesse. But as President Reagan understood so well, if you aren't careful how you tax things, the results can end up doing things you never intended. And, you know, I just would ask you if you personally feel that you should be taxed on unearned gains. Is that something that you should experience? I think that this editorial does a great job in explaining unintended consequences. So let's hear what you think. Orion says, Janet Yellen suggested that we tax unrealized investments for the wealthy. Madness, the sheer increase in bureaucracy at the IRS that will be needed to administer it would need lots of people. I can tell you from somebody who works in a tax field, calculating unrealized gain. And when do you calculate it? Do you calculate it on the last day of the year? And what do you get benefits then for unrealized losses? Right now, as an investor, the IRS caps your net loss deduction at $3,000 a year. Are they going to open that up? Just a thought. Orion says, yes, this, close the loopholes. If the loopholes can't be closed, I'm in favor of liquidating their flesh and feeding it intravenously to the needy. Pongola Pete joining us on Twitch. Hey, haven't seen you before. Hello. Hot Jazz Sax also joining us on Twitch. Hello. Mike says, how can you tax money unrealized that doesn't exist? It doesn't exist until you sell realized. Many would have to sell off stock to pay the tax. That's another point that I wanted to bring up. Thank you, Mike. Then would they have to pay twice on unrealized and realized? Then consider the Laffer curve. He says, yes, the editorial is written quite well. So, I mean, let's take Jeff Bezos. Let's say he owns he has $180 billion in stock. And he now suddenly has to pay the unrealized gain on that. I promise you he doesn't have that cash sitting around. He can only acquire that kind of cash by selling off shares of that stock. By taking that money out of the system. So I think that once again, you know, on first blush, this sounds like an amazing idea. It's not. It's not. And I love the compromise. Okay, if you are gaining some benefit off of unrealized gains, then we'll tax that benefit. That's still really complicated to figure out. And I'm not sure how you would go about that, but at least then it's when you are getting a benefit. Because think about it right now, what other benefit do you get from unrealized gain? What do you get unless you're going to take a loan on? Like my home, and I'm sure your home and everybody else's in Utah has gone up in value. My home has more than doubled since I purchased it 10 years ago. Is my life any different because it doubled? No. No. Nothing has changed in my life. In order for it to change, I would have to do something about it. I would have to refinance. I would have to sell it. I could get a HELOC, a home equity line of credit. But as long as I'm just sitting here doing nothing, then that unrealized gain has given me no benefit whatsoever. And this is like suggesting that let's say we rolled out and we said you're now going to be taxed on your unrealized, you're going to be income taxed or capital gains taxed on your home values. It's not a good idea. It is not a good idea. Let's see. Orion says the nation's wealthy have increased their wealth exponentially during the pandemic. All that trillions Uncle Sam has printed in the last 2 years has lined the pockets of the uber rich. Tax them. Again, I want it to be done in such a way that it doesn't have unintended consequences. But I'll tell you something else, and this may upset some of you. I don't know if it will. but I don't look at other people's money and say that should be mine. I don't understand this. I've never understood it. Democrats seem to see your money as theirs. I don't get that. I don't understand that. I don't understand looking at somebody else, and I don't care how pathetically wealthy they are. I don't understand looking at them and saying, part of what you have should be mine. I don't understand that. I don't get it. I understand for necessary things. I understand that. But you also know how I feel about the federal government doing these things. I want these to be done by states, and I want the money to stay in states where you and me have some level of control over it. So I only want the federal government to do those things that only the federal government can do and constitutionally can do legally. Everything else needs to come back to the states. Because if not, you destroy representation. I've explained this to you. The minute you take something from a state and you federalize it, that's the minute you take representation away. And the absolute sheer genius of this country, more than the separation of powers between legislative, executive, and judicial, is the separation of power between the federal government and the 50 sovereign states. That preserves representation. If everything became federalized today, your representation, it goes away. It goes away. Let's see, Mike. Jay, real question. Has the value of the homes increased or the buying power of the dollar reduced? Probably both. Probably both. Mike says, the whole concept of tax eat the rich is rooted in jealousy. They have more and I don't. That's not fair. So a lot of that is true. Again, I say I don't look at somebody else and say your money should be my money, but I have to acknowledge there is a need for a certain level of taxation. So, you know, I do believe in taxes in some form. So then it does just become a discussion of, is this a tax that is worthy? Is this something that the federal government should do? And is it something that the states can do? And if it's something the states can do, then the feds need to get out. Melissa joins us. Good example. That'd be terrible if we had to pay taxes on the increased values of our home. I agree with you. Ryan says the middle class has to pay taxes. I see the uber rich not paying their share. Their effective tax rates are less than the middle class. I want my pound of flesh. He says, I don't care how much the rich have or what they buy or what they do. I just want fairness. This isn't about haves versus have-nots. This is just about fairness. Well, the definition of fair is interesting. And I think using the word fair is difficult. I think that every one of us take advantage of every single loophole, I say loophole, but tax deduction that is available to us. And I think that most of us, let's say you win the lottery today, or let's say that you have a genius idea. And I've got one, by the way, if you want to partner with me, I've got a $1 million idea. But I'm too tired to do it. If you suddenly had $100 million, I'm pretty sure you would probably take advantage of every loophole out there. And oftentimes what's called a loophole, there are unintended consequences when you close it. So you get in this position, do we allow this to continue and it feels unfair, or do we shut it down and shut down entrepreneurship and things like that? So we just have to be careful in how we do it. So like we said, in this example, I think a great option was given to be able to tax the wealthy who are gaining benefit from unrealized gain. I'm good with that. I'm totally good with that. But now I want to know what you're using the money for. And is it something that should be left in the states? Then let the states have that money. Keep your grubby hands off of it. Mike says, Orion, the wealthy segment above 200,000K households pay the majority of the tax revenue. How many middle class get refunds? Kathy says, I just want everyone to pay their fair share. Heather says, why can't they just do a flat tax? That seems fair. I'd love to look at a flat tax, a consumption tax. Kathy says, I agree. That seems the most logical way. Dave says, rich people work hard to avoid taxes. I predict that this plan won't work as intended. Yeah, I mean, they'll find more loopholes. That's what you do. And that's one of the things that allows the wealthy to continue to find their way around loopholes, because they can spend money to make money. They can set up corporations. They can do all kinds of stuff. And you can keep chasing those loopholes. And I'm not saying you shouldn't. But it is a game of cat and mouse for sure. My goal for you tonight was to just consider the unintended consequences. We will continue on this program to have debates about federal spending and taxation and those types of things. But I hope that generally we can agree that taxing unrealized gains is a bad idea, and that there are better ways to go about that. That was my goal for you tonight. I was going to use a logical fallacy when I was talking about if you suddenly became wealthy. Which one is this? See, I have a hard time putting these all together, but it is, dang it, which one is it? You tell me. I'll tell you which. Okay, I'll share it with you, and you tell me which one it is. I was going to tell you about my friends that I knew in Texas who would raise their hand in Sunday school and talk about how no person should be able to make $200,000 a year. And these people wanted social programs for everybody. For everybody. I had detailed conversations with them about it. And then they developed an app that went crazy. And when they were offered $8 to $10 million for this app, I said, man, you got to take that money. You're never going to get an opportunity like that. You got to take that money. And they said to me, no, I think we can get more. And you think we can get more. And, this is the anecdotal. What was the other term for the anecdotal argument? You guys tell me. So they eventually sold this game, and my friend's share of this game was $100 million. And I sat back and I watched to see if they were going to give up all but $200,000 a year of it. Mm-mm. No. Before I knew it, the custom ordered Italian sports car arrived. A change of address occurred. And all of a sudden, they were acting like wealthy people. So which one is it? Is it appeal to authority? No. Whoa, did you hear that motorcycle go by? That was loud. I live on a residential street. Why can't I think? See, this is the brain fog. Which one is it? Help me out. Which logical fallacy is it? Help me out. I'll leave it up to you guys. Ryan, you should know. I'm basically saying it's the anecdotal one. Which one was the anecdotal one? Gosh. I should have put anecdotal here. See, I'm having the brain fog, guys. Okay. Keep your comments on that coming in. I want to play the cool graphic. Why can't I? Is it? Which one is it, my friends? Now I'm stuck. I'm totally stuck. Let me know. We'll get it. It will come to me. All right. In the meantime, I wanted to share this with you. This is a follow-up of a discussion we were having the other night, as certain people were implying that everything the pharmaceutical companies do is for money and financial gain. Nolan says, we all failed the quiz. We all failed the quiz. Mike, I thought you were taking notes. Man, this is driving me crazy now. It's not bandwagon. It's not correlation causation. It's not. None of these are sticking out to me now. Come on. Mike says I did. Ha ha. What is it? What it? Orion, help me out. What is the anecdotal when you make a claim like you know somebody and the appeal to, it's the appeal to, Melissa's saying we all had the brain fog. Well, this was a great test. Appeal to hypocrisy. Is that what it is? I don't think so. The appeal to hypocrisy, also known as the tu quoque fallacy, focuses on the hypocrisy of the opponent. No, it's not that one. Is it the, which one is it? Man, this really turned against me, didn't it? It's not the appeal to authority. So it's not that one. Is it the causal fallacy? No. This is the informal fallacies that occur when an argument incorrectly concludes that a cause is related to an effect. It's not false dilemma. Did I skip one of these? It's not hasty generalization. Oh yeah, it is. It's hasty generalization. That's what it is. A hasty generalization is a claim based on a few examples rather than substantial proof. So if I came to you and I said that, man, I'm going to get these. See, we're going to get these. Brad says, isn't it just called an anecdotal fallacy? Yeah, I guess you could call it that as well. Chris says there is an anecdotal evidence fallacy. So I guess it just depends on where you draw the source. So the source I drew these from calls it a hasty generalization. So if I said to you, this is a perfect example, my friend who struck it rich and then moved away from all of these claims of wanting socialism and wanting extreme taxation, that's how all people would act, that would be a hasty generalization. Orion says, also known as the appeal to hearsay, which is the same as anecdote. All right, we're going to get these. We're going to get these. And maybe I need to change some of the names because I like the anecdotal evidence fallacy. I will remember that one better than hasty generalization. Mike says, well, hang on. If I say no one should make 200K, then an opportunity arises to make millions, then they're a hypocrite for pushing more than 200K. I didn't say they weren't hypocrites. I was talking about the fallacy that I could have employed, but I didn't. I just wanted you to hear that story. I'm not implying that everybody's like that. Maybe I'm not. Okay. All right. Let's move on. I shared this story. I'm sharing this next story with you because of claims that have been made on this broadcast about the evil, terrible reasons why the pharmaceutical companies, everything they're doing is for money. That's why they're downplaying ivermectin. And it's because of greed, and it's all about greed. So with that in mind, I wanted to share this story with you because I want to know what the end game is here. what is the reason for this if it's all about greed? So that's why I wanted to share this for you, and I want your feedback. Okay, so here is the story. Let's get to the right view. All right, Merck agrees to let other drug makers make its COVID pill. By the way, I want to say hello to the ABC7 show who was listening on the podcast a few minutes ago. Okay, Merck agrees to let other drug makers make its COVID pill. Okay. Pharmaceutical company Merck has agreed to allow other drug makers to make its COVID-19 treatment, the first pill that has been shown to be effective against the disease. This is interesting. Now, by the way, there's evidence in this story of both pharmaceutical companies doing things because they care, and there's also evidence of them doing things for the money. And I think that that's closer to the reality of what's going on here. I do not believe the vaccines are being perpetuated and sold as unreliable versus other medications because of the studies and everything that has been done. And by the way, I learned after last Tuesday's show that ivermectin has been studied and was studied over 100 times in the quest to find a good solution for COVID. And 30% of the studies did find some benefit from ivermectin. So you're like, why hasn't ivermectin been approved then? Well, because the problem is that you needed ivermectin at such a heavy dose that it could kill you. So ivermectin was ruled out early on. Just what I learned over the last few days. Okay, pharmaceutical company Merck agreed to allow other drug makers to produce its COVID-19 pill in a move aimed to helping millions of people in poorer countries get access to the potentially life-saving drug. This is according to a United Nations-backed public health organization on Wednesday. The medicine's patent pool said in a statement that it had signed a voluntary licensing agreement for Molnupiravir with Merck, that's the name of the pill, and its partner, Ridgeback Biotherapeutics. The agreement will allow the medicine's patent pool to grant further licenses to qualified companies who are approved to make the drug. Neither drug maker will receive royalties under the agreement for as long as the World Health Organization deems COVID-19 to be a global emergency. No royalties. Molnupiravir is the first pill that has been shown to treat the disease. Charles Gore, the executive director of the medicine's patent pool, said that early results for Molnupiravir were compelling and that he hoped this first voluntary licensing agreement for COVID-19 treatment would lead to others. Nolan says, Yeah, I want to know what you think about this, Nolan. Despite repeated requests from governments and health officials, now here's an example of the other side where pharmaceutical companies are clearly showing their desire for profits. Despite repeated requests from governments and health officials, no vaccine makers have agreed to a similar deal. Again, that doesn't mean that the vaccines are not effective, and that doesn't mean that that other medications have been downplayed. If we imply that, that would be a logical fallacy. You tell me which would. Molnupiravir were compelling and that he hoped this first volunteer, I'm too far back. Despite repeated requests from governments and health officials, no vaccine makers have agreed to a similar deal. A hub set up by the WHO in South Africa intended to share messenger RNA vaccine recipes and technologies has not enticed a single pharmaceutical company to join. So this is an example of an intent for profit off of the vaccine, something I've never denied, but it is not evidence that other medications have been downplayed, and certainly allowing your patent to be used for people who cannot afford it is also an example. Despite See that? That's a bit brain fog. I'm just not speaking the way that I used to be able to. Despite repeated requests from governments and health officials, no vaccine makers have agreed to a similar deal. I already read that. Merck has requested its pill be licensed by both the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the European Medicines Agency, decisions that could come within weeks. Merck reported this month that that their new pill cut hospitalizations and deaths by half among patients with early symptoms of COVID-19. The results were so strong that independent medical experts monitoring the trial recommended stopping it early. An antiviral pill that people could take at home to reduce their symptoms and speed recovery could prove groundbreaking, easing the crushing caseloads on hospitals and helping to curb outbreaks in poorer countries with weak healthcare systems. It would also bolster a two-pronged approach to the pandemic: treatment by way of medication and prevention primarily through vaccination. The charity Doctors Without Borders welcomed the agreement Merck struck to share its COVID-19 pill, but said it didn't go far enough. The license excludes key upper-middle-income countries like Brazil and China from its territory, where there are strong established capacity to produce and supply antiviral medicines. That's according to a senior legal and policy advisor at Doctors Without Borders. I am not going to try and pronounce that name, who called this deal disappointing. So I think you have some clear examples here of a pharmaceutical company making decisions based upon the needs of the poor, and also making decisions to continue to make a dollar as a business. You see them both here. Are either one an indication of any downplaying of other medications? Absolutely not. But I will continue to entertain those suggestions if they are backed by some type of evidence. Brad says, I just like hearing you pronounce, oh, you're going to try and make me do it again. Molnupiravir. Say that three times fast. Mike says, okay, so Merck gets public American funding from you and I, the taxpayer. We then get it free, but that's not exactly true. So Merck enjoys the profits and money that they invested, which was much of it was our money to begin with. I'm sure I'm facing fallacy foible for fact finding. I'm not sure what logical fallacy there is. I'm not suggesting that the setup was perfect. I think that in a pandemic, we needed to do everything in our power to push this through. I guess we could have just pulled a World War II move and forced the vaccine companies to work on our behalf and to come up with a solution and to push it out to everybody without any profit. Could have done that. I guess that would be another option. Melissa says that's exciting about the medication. If it really works, I mean, yeah, let's get our country back and up and running. Let's get our lives back. That could be huge. Brad is laughing at my pronunciation again. Orion says, my mom took a 5-day course of ivermectin. They found her out in the pasture the morning after. Mike says, say it with me, Jay. Molnupiravir. Well, if they spelled it like you did, Mike, I might have a chance. But I'm also the guy who says, I'm gonna, instead of I'm going to. So, anyway, I thought that was very interesting. Absolutely very interesting. And what is the logical fallacy if you were to say that them refusing to participate in... Oh, sorry. Why did that come up? The logical fallacy that says them refusing to participate in that pool that I talked about is evidence that other medications could have been used. What would that be? Any idea? There's one that I was thinking of that comes to mind. Is that appeal to ignorance? An appeal to ignorance argues that a preposition must be true because it has not been proven false. Yeah, that could apply. There was another one that I was thinking of. False equivocation. Oh, I got to get rid of the other one. Now I've got two on the screen. We'll figure this out. See, we're trying it all out. It's like a game show. This is just equivocation, not false equivocation. So one other one. I think you guys have better words for these things. My words are not pulling up the right recollection here, but it's also the brain fog. All right, so let's get that off the screen. Equivocation. Get rid of that. Okay, I had a couple of other things for you tonight. I talked about this in the morning broadcast that I've been doing. I've been doing something called JMAC Show Prep that is airing in the mornings. It's going to be without comment because it is pre-recorded, but it allows me to get to the facts quickly. The real point of these JMAC Lives is that I like to get your comment and your feedback. And so this is a story that jumped out to me because it matches something that I've been telling you. And it comes to the civil rights argument that is being made by many on the right that states or businesses do not have the right to mandate that you get vaccinated. Now, I believe that the federal government does not have the right. They can mandate it for federal employees, for military. They can even mandate it in airports because they have authority over interstate commerce. But I do not believe that they can mandate it within businesses within a state. But states have every authority to do this, and businesses have every authority to do this. That has been my claim and my stand the whole time. So this just backs us up. And I realize this one judge, and I actually really hope some of these cases will get appealed and will make it all the way to the Supreme Court. I think the last ruling we have on this is like in 1903 or 1905 or something. And times have certainly changed. But this is the Southwest Airlines lawsuit. This is U.S. District Judge Barbara Lynn denied the request by the airline's pilot union to issue a temporary restraining order against the airline's requirements. This is a federal judge rejected a bid by pilots to block Southwest Airlines from imposing a vaccine mandate, saying the airline is within its power to require vaccinations as a safety measure. And again, I also believe that the federal government is within their rights to mandate this on planes and airports because Article 1, Section 8 gives them the ability to regulate interstate commerce. But I do not see constitutional authority to force local businesses to require their employees to be vaccinated, which is why I believe Joe Biden said that it was going to happen, or President Biden said that this was going to be implemented, but never did, because it would be challenged and he would be overturned. The judge said Tuesday that Southwest is within its authority to require vaccinations to improve safety and maintain its operations. Southwest Airlines backed its employees to get vaccinated against COVID-19 to comply with the Biden administration requirement for federal contractors. The federal contractors is another place, including airlines that have contracts with the government. So all the federal government is saying there is, look, if you want to have a contract with us, you need to be vaccinated. Again, that's within their authority. In recent days, the airline has weakened the requirement by saying workers who fail to comply won't be fired. Southwest has openly encouraged employees to ask for a medical or religious exemption from being vaccinated if they object to getting the shot. This is the part of the story that has me infuriated. For any business to be encouraging their employees to go and get a medical exemption or a religious exemption is outrageous to me. You can tell them that's the only way you can get out of the shot, but encouraging them to go and get a religious or medical exemption? That's ridiculous to me. If it's open encouragement, that is ridiculous to me. That is basically saying go and commit fraud in order to be able to be here without getting a shot. It should simply say, if you qualify for a medical or religious exemption, then that will be allowed. Don't encourage your employees to try and bypass the law by going to a pastor or a bishop or going to a chiropractor or some other medical professional who has no responsibility when it comes to anything with COVID. That drives me crazy. That absolutely drives me crazy. Nolan says, what is open encouragement? I just have a story here. Southwest has openly encouraged employees to ask for medical. I guess we could go back and look at their press release or their statement if you want to do that. Dallas-based Southwest is giving employees until November 24th to provide proof of vaccination or request an exemption. Mike with a very long comment. Look, it's taken up the whole box there, Mike. You feel good about that? Taking everybody's space? He says, I'm sure I might get a fallacy alarm on this, but this is intentionally a hyperbolic example. Climate change is linked to human activity, too many humans. So if a private company required all men and women to have irreversible procedures, would that be permissible? How far is too far when it comes to how a government or company regulates the lives of their citizens? That question is for debate locally. And if your company requires you to have an irreversible procedure, then the conservatism and the capitalism that I grew up in says, don't take the job. Don't take the job. That's what it says. As far as your state government, well, then that's where, you know, you fight it in the legislature. When I say that states have the authority to do this, I am not saying that every time they exercise this authority, that it's correct. What I'm saying is that we shouldn't be debating whether or not it's a civil liberties issue. It's not. States have this authority. Courts have backed this up. And I believe if it goes to the Supreme Court, it will be held up. States have the authority to issue mask mandates and vaccination mandates. They have that authority. It's granted to them by the 10th Amendment. Okay. The states can pass anything they want as long as it is not in direct violation of something found in the Constitution. Okay. That's the way it works. That's how you get them saying driving is a privilege and not a right. They decided that. They decided that. States decided that you have to go and get a license. People say, I have a right to free travel. Well, yeah, walk around, have a ball. But you want to get in a car and drive, you have to go through all of these things. And there are health requirements. You have to be able to see. And if you have other physical limitations, you're not going to be given a right to drive. So the states put requirements on businesses, health laws. They put requirements on construction companies for safety codes and all of those things. So the question, what frustrates me is people who want to make this a civil liberties argument. Mike, I think you're in the perfect place. If you want to have a discussion about when, and we talked about this the other night, when does it rise to the level of the state getting involved? There are those who will say that a mortality rate of 1.6 is not enough for the state to get involved. I shared with you the other night how I believe that if they didn't, our medical system, our healthcare system would have been overwhelmed and the death rate goes way up. So that's why I think 1.6 with a disease that spreads this way rises to that level for employers and for local governments. Because I just don't think that we have a system that can handle anything more than we've seen with lockdowns, masks, and everything else. But I will be on the complete other side if states want to implement a certain restrictions and they can't justify that balance. But those are battles fought in the legislature and in school boards and in city council and county council meetings. It is not a civil liberties issue. And I think people who make that claim, I hate to say it, I just don't know that they understand how the Constitution works. They have been raised up to believe we live in a free society, and they've been ignoring all of these places where we're not a free society and having no problem with it. No problem with it whatsoever, but now it affects them directly, and so now suddenly they're concerned about it. Let's see. Mike says, now let's say the state takes that stance with any job because that's the current crisis. It's over the top as an example, but where's the line? I understand what you're asking, Mike. The line has to be discussed. So if you're going to say you as a state have to have a procedure, okay, that's where I'm obviously against that line. That goes way above that line. And I would do everything in my power to fight that, right? And that's what we should be doing. But we should understand how our governments work. And those people who are, and this is a broad generalization here, probably another logical fallacy, it seems to me those people who are claiming civil rights do not understand that we do not live in a perfectly free society. And they ignore all of the other places where states step in and cities step in and they put mandates and requirements on you. And those things are not challenged. And when they are challenged, the Supreme Court backs up states' rights. So our discussion should always be about whether or not the proposals are justified and healthy and good, as opposed to this feeling that's going around that it's contributing to the idea that we need a civil war, that this is somehow a violation of the Constitution. It's just not. It's just not. Let's see. Mike says, yes, we did. We had a great convo on it, but we can have that discussion further as to not get off in the weeds on this topic. Orion says, I know lots of people that need to have some irreversible procedures. Look at my brother-in-law, prime example of someone who would have benefited from this. I'm not going to share anything about your brother-in-law, Orion, but point taken. So again, it's important for my side of the aisle, which I keep saying this, but I realize I don't have a side of the aisle anymore. Is supposed to be the pro-Constitution side and the pro-capitalism side. But more and more, it appears to me that people are pro-Constitution, pro-capitalism when it serves them. And we see this on both sides. And when it doesn't serve them, then they just ignore it. Or they'll claim that the Constitution is on their side, and it's not. I mean, we've seen this, for example, with executive orders on both sides. Both sides complain about executive orders, and then they get it in. We saw Obama do this. You get in, and you're all excited, and you can't get your agenda through. And so what happens? You get out the pen. You get out the pen. And it's one of the things that I respected about the things President Biden said in the debates was that he's not going to abuse executive order. We need to get back to that. We can't have a system where we are against executive order and pro-constitution until the president gets in, and then we can't get our way, so we start abusing that power. That happens on both sides. And it's claim Constitution when it's in your favor, and when it's not in your favor. I've got a WD-40, this chair. Can you hear that? I've got like a noise gate that's supposed to reduce some of that, but this chair needs some help. Okay. All right. Any other comments on that? Let me see if I had anything else I wanted to talk to you about tonight before we open up the floor. Okay. This was important. I'm not going to read this whole article. I read it in my JMAX show prep the other morning. But we are heading towards a redistricting battle. I made a prediction. I read the tea leaves. It should be obvious to everybody that we're heading towards a battle. And in fact, when the Independent Redistricting Commission here in the state of Utah was formed, I said this battle was going to happen. Many other people said this battle was going to happen because if you're not aware, we passed through referendum in the state of Utah that an Independent Redistricting Commission would be formed and that they would come up with their own ideas and suggestions for legislative boundaries. The problem is the state constitution still leaves the ultimate authority with the state legislature. So we all knew going forward that what was going to happen was that the Independent Redistricting Commission would come out with their recommendations, and then the state legislature would look at those recommendations and go, thank you, but no thank you. And we're now to the point where that's all going to play out because the Redistricting Commission has come up with three plans. I believe in all three of those plans, all three of those maps, congressional districts are drawn in such a way that a Democrat will clearly win one of the four districts. And do you think the state legislature is going to let that happen? Do you? I don't. We had the chair of the state legislative commission on our Informed Utah podcast. They've been traveling the state and they've been asking for map submissions. And he came off to me as sincere and honest in his attempts. And I don't know what motivates him, but I just from past history and from the nature of politics and parties in this state, it would blow me out of the, I would be this creaky chair. I would be blown backwards and you would see my feet sticking up. If this legislative body comes up with a map that does not guarantee a win for a Republican in each district, I would be gobsmacked. I would be blown away. But they have to present next week, I think it is. And then the legislature will do their thing. And I think by December, they have to have it all decided. But just prepare yourself. Get your popcorn ready. And there's already been some dramatic moments because former Congressman Rob Bishop quit the Independent Districting Commission and had some harsh words for them. In fact, I had some of it here. He said, I want to show you what he said if you didn't catch it. He said, it's right here. He said, I respect each of you as individuals, but I'm sorry, as a group, we suck. Okay. Bishop said, what I'm telling you is I'm frustrated with the process and I'm frustrated with what I'm hearing, frustrated with where we are going because this commission is designed not to work. So that has cast a negative light on the independent commission already. So I think that what you're going to hear, and I've already heard it behind the scenes, I haven't seen it anywhere in the media, but I've heard it said from certain elected officials, but it was off the record, so I'm not going to tell you their name, that their view of the independent commission is that it is a joke, that they should not be listened to or heard, and that the commission should have never been formed. So I do not expect any serious credence whatsoever to be given to this independent commission. which is why when I was on the air at KSL, I was in favor of an independent redistricting commission, but I said that setting it up this way is just going to create turmoil. And somehow, if we want this, we need to convince our elected officials to go with our will instead of theirs. But let's be honest, a lot of Utahns don't want it. They want guaranteed positions. They want guaranteed power for their party. And so when the state legislature ultimately gives them that, and my magic eight ball says that's exactly what's going to happen, and I will come on the air and apologize profusely if it doesn't, we're gonna see some real interesting things going on in the public eye. Let's see. Orion says Utah State Legislature is a self-serving and self-interested body, hardly doing the people's business. Ice Cube stand better chances in hell than the Utah Legislature playing fair. All right, my friends, that is all of the information that I had planned for you tonight. I did have a story about trick-or-treating and is it okay for COVID? Did you guys want to? It was an ABC story. I could do it quickly if you were hanging on for that. Let's get to the right screen here. It is okay to go trick-or-treat. Is it okay? Depends on the situation and your comfort level, but there are ways to minimize your risk this Halloween. And then they go through the list of prevention things. So that story, by the way, all the stories that I talk about, there is a link to those stories in the description of all the broadcasts, whether you're on YouTube, if you're on LinkedIn, if you're on Facebook, if you're in the podcast, on Podbean, there is a link to these stories. So if I just cruise over them or you want to see where I'm pulling this from, those are available there. And if for some reason the link is not working, let me know. All right, so that was what I had planned for you tonight. So those of you who are just interested in what I had planned, we have now reached that point where we can go back and discuss anything in greater detail. We can get sidetracked. We can talk about anything else that you want to talk about. I would be glad to do that at this point. And so for those of you who are on Podbean, since this will be the podcast that goes out tomorrow, I'm going to end it here, but you can join us and hear the rest on Facebook or YouTube. So I'm just going to click end there. But everybody else, don't worry. I'm not going anywhere. Are you sure?